some advertisement. Rabbi Bleich provided a list of Sifrei Kitzer that help out on rather complex topics. My personal favorite is Nisuin Kilchasam, which is a two-volume work written by Rabbi Binyamin Adler. Apparently, in the world of Poskim, I guess they valued him a lot because this Sefer made it into the Otzer HaPoskim. The Otzer HaPoskim, and Ibn Ezer, that they have on the Lach of Tzuva, so they're constantly quoting, Ayin B'Sefer Nisuin Kilchasam. Ayin Igris Moshe, Ayin Nisuin Kilchasam. So it sounds like that this is considered a very authoritative Sefer in the world of Poskim as well. A very useful work, because the two volumes contain everything all the way from Shiduchim and through Shevarot, with everything in between. So topics such as how much you have to pay a shachin, together with the discussion of the Sefer Hasidim that Rabbi Bleich discussed, together with all the details of step by step of Seder Kiddushin. So it's really a very good Sefer to have. There are others as well, but I think this is the most comprehensive from what I know. There's also a very useful Sefer, although the Nisuin Kilchasam has a chapter on Ksuva, pretty thorough, but an even more thorough work, with also Ksuva being a very difficult topic, some analysis and Shuvis, and also some articles by Rav Eliezer Stern, also certainly a big Mechaber of Sfarim, and judging by the responses that he got from various Poskim, also apparently a Poskim of note. The Ksuva Kilchasam. It was recently a second volume was put out. It's a valuable addition to the library. So I use both of those extensively in preparation for the Shiur. Okay, the Ksuva Kilchasam. Both of those Rabbi Bleich already mentioned on the handouts, but he listed about 25 Sfarim. So of those, I think these two are a very good tag team. There's another Sefer you can get a hold of, which is only on Sheva Brachos, but also in the Parsha, the Ola Yeshurun. We quoted it in the context of Hechsher Kalim. It's also very useful for at least the Sheva Brachos. It also has various oral psukim from Moshe Feinstein that are not recorded anywhere else. Okay, the purpose of the Chabur is twofold. First of all, just to give some of the basic details of filling out a ksuva. Some of it not complex at all, but it's Rabbi Bleich not covering in the Chavura, just to point out and highlight some of the pitfalls and various rules and regulations of filling out a ksuva, and also, to the extent possible, either in what Rabbi Bleich already has discussed or what he has yet to discuss, just to point out, for purposes of roundness, if you will, the positions of other poskim, especially with a heavy emphasis, as I am aware, of the positions of other rabbanim of our yeshiva, just to compare and contrast, so to be aware of the various positions. Okay. The originally it was a sefer called the Madrich, which every shul rav had. It was printed, I think, by put out by Rav Golden, and it had in it the Seder for funerals and the Seder for a wedding and also a version of a ksuva with kitzur dinim on these various occasions how to, and also some drushes in the back. So that was why all the rabbanim had that madrash. My father-in-law showed it to me. I don't know if it's available anymore. The RCA tried to get do one better under the aegis of Art Scroll, so they put out another madrash. Doesn't have the drushes anymore. And I think it's not really so as comprehensive, but in certain ways it's has more and less. So it's probably good to have both, but I don't know if the other Madrich is out. I think also the, just a little fancier for the eye toward, it has cards for Sheva Brachos. That's the real claim to fame, so that you can give them out at the wedding. For each one bracha per card. Alright, this is a photocopy from the Madrich. The chart is also a photocopy from the Madrich. You have the ksuva, together with what to fill out on the ksuva, and it basically does a paint by number. So, more so than any others, it's very, very comprehensive in terms of what to fill in where, So I chose this as our text to fill in. Most suvas don't come with nekudos, but it was helpful. Just you know, you shouldn't break your teeth and read the suva to have some nekudos. So I printed that a few of them. Unfortunately, there are a few mistakes. With all good intentions to put out the new madrich, I don't know if it was corrected. I don't have the current edition, but I pointed out, to the extent that I'm aware, the various mistakes that crept up here. So if you are using this as a form to, let's say, print out a ksuva on computer, so please be aware that, make sure you don't type in the errors too. Okay, let's start from the beginning. The ksuva consists of an introductory section that lists the date, as is the case with all shtaris, Gittin especially, where Stephen Ma'akev, at least with the Rabbanan, we have the Jewish date. And so the Jewish date is written by Riches, that you have the day of the week, the day of the month, and the year. I don't want to dwell on this too much. In the past, I think I really did overkill on this. Everything is laid out on the sheet. In chart 1 you have the days of the week, in chart 2 you have the days of the month, and in chart 3 you have the names of the month, and chart 4 and 5 you have how to fill in the years. Just a few brief notes on some of the idiosyncrasies of how to fill it in. In the Shir Shel Yom, we refer to Sunday as Yom Rishon B'Shabbos, but in the Ksuva we refer to Sunday as Yom Echad B'Shabbos. Actually, not as Yom Echad, but just say Be'echad B'Shabbos. Be'echad B'Shabbos, B'Sheni B'Shabbos, B'Shlishi B'Shabbos, etc. I'm not sure why. The Orach HaSholchan in Hilchos Gittin Siman Kuf Chof Vav, which is where most of the nitty-gritty of how to write the date appears, but the Poskim all extend it over to other Shtaros and Ksuvos as well, that at least the Chachilo, we follow the pattern as outlined in the Gittin. So, in the Aruch HaShulchan tries to resolve why in Shtaros we write Be'echad, and why in the Shir Shel Yom we write Rishon. You can take a look there if you're interested. The Vilna Gaon has an interesting comment there that the reason why we write Be'echad, the Rishonim already write, is based on the fact that that's the way the Torah refers to the day one in Bereishis. Vayerev Ayvoker Yom Echad. And even though the Medrash, as Rashi quotes, points out that it's Echad as opposed to Rishon, because it's indicating in a cardinal way that it was not only ordinal in an order, but it was actually totally one, because then the Rabbanu Shalom was all alone in the world, because the Malachim were not yet created till day two. So one might be tempted to say, well, so it had to say Echad, therefore Drasha, but the way to say Sunday is Yom Rishon. That's the Vilna Gaon writes, Ein Mikra Yosin Dev Pshuta. That the Pshutishal Mikra, that's the way you say Sunday. So we take that Pshutishal Mikra of the way the Torah describes Sunday and we put it in legal documents. If that's the case, how come you don't do it in Shir Shel Yom too? So that I don't know. And of course, Shir Shel Yom is based on the Mishnah and Tumim. Right? So it's not just the later text, it's actually an earlier text that has that. So the Aruch HaShulchan tries to work it out. It's something to do with the fact that as of the original day, day one, there are no other days, so that we say it in a cardinal way. But if you're dealing with a Shir Shel Yom, so then it's going towards Shabbos, so you have Rishon Sheni, something like that. Okay, so you have it all spelled out. The Beis Shmuel, if you're really stuck and you don't know whether you should spell it Mali Achaser, so none of it is Ma'akev, as they point out, as long as you're clear, pretty clear as to what you meant. That's something I think the Torah's Gittin points out, it's quoted by the Pitzchei Tshuva and Siman Kuf Chof Vav, that when you're dealing with a date, as long as it's clear what you meant, let's say with a name, if you make a mistake in a name, let's say there's no one in the world by the name of Uvain, but you write Uvain, but it's clear that you really meant Reuven, so that's a problem, you didn't write the right name. But with a date, as long as it's clear what you meant, it's kosher anyway. So even things like if you wrote Bi'i instead of Rivi'i, so that's also kosher to the other. That's an extreme case. But certainly if you write Malay, Chaser, Chaser, Malay, it's all kosher. But L'chachila, we try to write it in the perfect way as possible. In a get, so then the poskim are very nervous to be masher a get, even with a slight mistake, because they're dealing with an ancient ish, but with a ksuva, you wrote it already. A lot of times there's no reason to write another one as long as it's correct. even if you wrote Malei Chaser, etc. So the Beis Shmuel quotes an interesting remez that to remember which are Malei and Chaser in terms of the days of the week. Rachel is Malei. So it doesn't really work out too well, but yeah, I got a little twisty. Revi is Malei, Yud Yud, Chamishi is Ches, Yud Yud, and, well, the Lamed, there is no day of the week that's Lamed, but that stands for Shlishi. So that's the next letter over. How did that come about? Because it can't be Shin, because Shin is Shani, Shlishi, and Shishi. So you pick the first significant letter and it works out. So if you remember that, Rachel is a way to remember which is Malei. So here in the RCA Madrich, so here's the first of the errors we'll point out. Bashishi is spelled Chosef. Again, it's not Ma'akev, but in the RCA Madrich, with all good intentions, they made a typo here. So I put it in on the side. Bashishi is spelled without two yud, it's one yud. Where does all this come from? It comes from the Torah. This is the way the Torah describes it. Let's move on now. So that's the only real quirk in the here is that you write Be'echad instead of Berishon. And you don't write B'yom, just write B'echad. B'echad B'Shabbos, B'Sheni B'Shabbos. The proper pronunciation, as they point out in Elchus Gittin, is with the exception of B'echad, everything is Ba. Ba Sheni, Ba Shabbos. You don't really hear that under the Chuppah too much, but that's the... They point this out mostly in Elchus Gittin, because in Elchus Gittin, before you deliver the guest, you read it over. And they read it over out loud. So the post can say, you're supposed to read it out perfectly. So they have all these diukim, how to spell it. So here it's ba and ba. Okay, let's move on to the days of the month. So the days of the month, we don't use cardinal numbers, we use ordinal numbers, right? We use numbers that, fakir. We don't use ordinal, we use cardinal, right? In the days of the week, with the exception of Sunday, we do second, third, fourth, Sheni, Shlishi, Revi. In the days of the month, rather than saying the fourth day of Elul, we say 4 days in Elul. So we say Arba Yomim L'Chodesh Elul. So again, you could discuss this for quite a bit of time. I don't want to get involved in all the sub disputes and machlokas and it's all the chachilas. I think the more if you're following the Madrich, they're just going to do whatever the Madrich says. So we'll just stick to what the Madrich says. It's certainly valid positions, even though they're slightly nuances, especially when it comes to the first day. They're different minhagim how to write day one. But let's just stick to the Madrich. So normally, the convention is that one is unique, you write Yom Echad. Yom comes first. 2 through 10, you write Yomim. And 11 through 29, you say Yom. That's the convention, and it's based on the language of Tanakh, although there are exceptions. But normally, in the Sfirat Omer, in turn, is also based on the language of Tanakh. So from 2 through 10, the language is to say Yomim. And from higher numbers, you say you already have it in the singular. You have, for example, in the Nisim, B'yom Achara Soryom. Yom Shnei Masor Yom. So that establishes somewhat of a convention that way. Yeah, but here it's a good point. But although it wasn't universal, because in certain scholars that we show them in Gittin, they used Aramaic for the days. But it's mekubal to use the Hebrew and to be medastic in the Hebrew according to Lashon HaKodesh. So the point is a good one. Concerning the cardinal numbers here that are used for the days of the month, it's all chaser. So you can't go wrong as long as you remember that. Everything is chaser. The first digit is chaser, and the second digit, the second digit doesn't come up, but theoretically it's all chaser. So, for example, Shimona is spelled without a vav, Shisha is spelled without a yud, Chamisha is spelled without a yud, and Shloshim is spelled without a vav. Now, we didn't get to that yet. That's Rosh Chodesh. That's an exciting day, the first day of Rosh Chodesh. But everything is chaser. Again, it's not ma'akev, but that's where in the day for the week, it's some is mali, some is chaser. Here it's all chaser. No. A standard tzuva doesn't have vowels. This is just to know how to read it. Unless you, If you have a ksuba with vowels, it's not possible. So if you're filling in a ksuba with vowels, I guess it makes sense to fill in the rest of the vowels, but normal ksubas don't have vowels. Okay. Maybe I should mention this because it's different minhagim, so you shouldn't think that the one who filled in that way doesn't know what he's doing. There are many, for day one, instead of writing Yom Echad, they write Echad. They don't write Yom. It's a different practice. Both days are quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Elmer's Gittin. The most exciting of the days is Rosh Chodesh. So, on the second day of a two-day Rosh Chodesh, or the only day of a one-day Rosh Chodesh, so that's Echad. So it's either Echad or Yom Echad, depending on which way you write it. But on the first day of a two-day Rosh Chodesh, that on the one hand is Rosh Chodesh of the next month, but on the other hand it's the 30th day of the previous month. So, the Rishonim, in order to cover all the bases, it's actually Gemara and Dorim. So the Minig developed to spell it out as clearly as possible so no one makes any kind of mistake. So we write both as that's the 30th day of the previous month and it's also the first day or the Rosh Chodesh of the next month. So the Nutzach is, for example, they have it here in the chart too on the bottom, we write Yom Shloshim L'Chodesh, let's say, Sivan Shehu Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. So this is something to keep in mind if you're using a standard form of a ksuva and you're filling in the blanks, you might need a little extra room. So a chachamein of a rosho, if they happen to getting married, punkt, on that day, so do a little legwork to make sure that the chassan or yourself, whatever, is bringing a ksuva that you're able to fill in that long form on. Okay, so that's you write Yom Shloshim, that's what they write. In such a circumstance, these words are comprised number two and number three. Yeah, well, in their text, you don't have enough room in number three to fill it in. So be aware that you might have to juggle to get a form that has enough room for that circumstance. Yom Shloshim, the longest day would be Yom Shloshim L'Chodesh Adar HaRishon Shehu Rosh Chodesh Adar HaSheni. That would be the longest text you could imagine. Okay, there's some interesting analysis on this in the Dharam, but due to time constraints, you won't get involved in that. That's the way we write it. There is an interesting discussion in the Schos, which is no gay, I had to write it, as to whether or not you put a bays before the day of the month. The day of the week, as you have in the text here in chart 1, you put a bays, because you have to say, on this day. So you say, on Sunday, on Monday, on day 2, on day 3, etc. But then there's a detailed machlokis as to whether you put another bays in when you're talking about the days of the week. The days of the month. Because normal English, and presumably the same thing in Hebrew, would be on Monday, 2 days in January. You wouldn't say again on Monday, on 2 days in January. But on the other hand, in the language of the Torah, how does it put it? I forgot already. I think the language of the Torah, sometimes you do have two bases. So that leads to a detailed machlokas, whether you put in two bases or not. So the bottom line is that in Gittin we do, because that's what it says in the Mechaber Amor, so we don't want to override that. But in Shar Staris, since there's not such pages, so that's why many favor the version of the Nachal Shiva, which is one of the classic works on Shtaris, where he says that it's more grammatically proper to leave out the base. So, such a very small topic, either way it's kosher, but for those interested, in the back of the Ksuva Kol Chasvos, they quote a tshuva from a Palachek, who apparently is a rav on the Pesachos HaRabbanim of America, so he writes all the tshuva why he thinks it's better to keep the Nusach of Gittin, and to write with the base. But both practices are valid, and here the RCA Ksuva preferred the version of the Nachal Shiva. Why did they prefer the version of the Nachal Shiva? Probably because there's a little sefer, which this sheet comes from, called the Kitzur Nachal Shiva. And it used to be before there were Madrichim, so every Rav would have a Kitzur Nachal Shiva in his pocket, small little sefer, you could fit in your suit pocket. So that when you go to a wedding, if you fill out a ksuva, you shouldn't make any typos due to the tenseness of the time. So the Kitzur Nachal Shiva, Paskin's like the big Nachal Shiva, then you shouldn't put in a base. So he won. So the Madrishim follow that context. They don't put in a base the second time. Four and five are the year, and the difference between the year and the days of the month is that the days of the month being day is Lashon Zachar, Yom, and the year, which is Shana, is the Lashon Nekeva. So that's why everything follows the Zachar and the Nekeva form. Zachar for the days of the month, and the Nekeva for the days of the year. And right, so in the diktok it's backwards, right? Because Arba is Zachar and Arba is Nekeva. So the best thing to do is just copy it straight from the Madrich, and this way you don't have to remember anything. One other convention we follow is that for the days of the month, we have the ones first, and only then do we have the tens. But for the days of the year, excuse me, not days of the year, for the years, we do the tens first, and only then do we do the ones. It's all based on the language of Tanakh. That's apparently the language of Tanakh. Shnei Masar Yom, as opposed to when it lists years, a lot of times it lists the ones later. And it's all connected with Vos. Right? So, for example, in the year we're in, we would write, Chamesha Salafim, U Shva Meos, Ve Shishim, Ve Arba. And here again, the rule of thumb is that everything is Chaser. Shishim, without a Yud, Shmonim, without a Vav, etc., etc. Shloshim, without a Vav. Okay? There's one other Nakuda I'm just trying to remember. Okay, so that's the date. It's crucial to keep in mind that you have the right date. One mistake that can be made, I just have given a moment of thought. A lot of people make a mistake on the Bechina on this. Right, in Matzoi Shabbos wedding, Yom Echad, or Be'echad B'Shabbos. A Monday night wedding is Bashlishi B'Shabbos, etc., etc. And of course, if the Chuppah is on the borderline, so you gotta. Rabbi Bleich will discuss that at length, but at least you have to do something. You know, be aware of the fact that you're on a borderline. If it's before ski or after ski, yeah. Or after taste.
Some people write or, whatever, like the language of being suffering.
Not in documents. In legal documents you've heard that?
No way, maybe I was thinking of an invitation.
Okay, right. In the Ksuva we just write the day, whether it's the night, and that's why it's the next day, or whether it's the actual day, we just write the day of the week, preceded by a base. Yeah? Olam, the way it is. None of his ma'akev, of course, but that's the standard text. Priyas Olam. What I wanted to mention is that if you don't have an Achas Shiva and you don't have a Madrich, so you need a Chumash and a Siddur. The Chumash, you look at Ma'aseh Bereishis and you see how to spell the days of the week, and in the Siddur, you turn to Sfiras HaOmer and you see how to write the days of the month. Of course, only till 29, because 30 they have to be fancy. And of course, there's no day of the month past the 30, but if you have a sitter, that's Medukdak, so it's exactly the way it is there. The same order, the same pattern, the same text, etc. The year, you're on your own. You gotta dig up some sukkim and chagai and. The year's on the keva. Oh, and then you have the units after. The units come later. Maybe just a brief comment on the names of the months. Let me focus on the names of the months that are normally not said correctly. The way we write it in a ksuva, at least the chachilas, correctly. Iyar is where we write it with two yuds, even though there's a big discussion in Hilchos Gittin, Ad Kedei Kach, that there was some Misadri Gittin who wouldn't give a get in the month of Iyar, because they didn't want to get involved in the shailas where to spell Iyar with one yud or with two yuds. And interestingly, it doesn't appear anywhere in Tanakh. In Megillas Esther, you have a ton of months. You have Adar, and you have other months, but you don't have Iyar. So it appears, I don't even think it appears in a Targum anywhere, which is where they get a lot of the other months that don't appear in Tanakh. What? That's all but the Eved. The Chassidim, you want to spell it right. So, and especially in a get, everyone gets very... So I think it's Nahug, as Rav Henkin pointed out, that in America, everything is a Shas HaChak. So it's certainly not going to, maybe the husband will run away, maybe he's not from, and maybe he'll hold his wife as an aguna. So I don't think anyone's mocked anymore to not to write a get and ear, we'll write it with two yuds, which is the ikir hadin. So in a ksuva, I guess an aftamina for those who keep the first minute goes svira. So no, it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. Does it ever work? And you have a Rosh Chodesh for those that are mekel. Not so common to have a wedding. After lagom. Okay, so okay, you could have it come up. So you have two yuds in ear. Of. So some write Menachem of, but the standard text is to write of. That's the name of the month. Menachem is just an extra prayer for Nechama. So it's of. And Tishrei, okay, the Medaktikim say Tishrei. Oh, if you want to be cute under the Chuppah, you can say Tishrei. And Shvat, I think they might be rubbed out here. That's the, apparently the name of the month is Shvat. So if you want to pronounce it precisely, it's Shvat. Adar HaRishon, with a Hey HaYadiyah, even though it's normally stated Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni. But in the Ksuva, you write HaRishon, what? More than what it says here. This is accurate. Adar HaRishon. The first Adar. And finally, and this is the most interesting of them, is Cheshvan. Everyone calls it Cheshvan, but that's not the name of the month. It's Mar Cheshvan. And everyone gives a drush, why is it Mar Cheshvan? Because it's bitter, because it's a mabul, because Mar is like a lushing of water, and there was a and that's when it rains. Drush upon drush. So I liked what I heard from Ethan Orlin in the name of Dr. Tawil, that we really mispronounce it. But here again, we have no solid Masorah on how to pronounce it because it doesn't appear in Tanakh. But apparently he suggested that the real name, all of these are Babylonian, right? Kayadua, these are the names, the Babylonian names, Shehelo Mibavel. The real name is Merach Sivan, which means month 8. Merach, as you have in Tanakh, Merach is like Yerach, right? Merach means month, and Sivan means 8, because that's what it is. If you count from Nisan, it's the 8th month. So that solves the whole problem. Why it understands why it was so medactic to write Mar Cheshvan, because that's part of the name of the month. Mar Cheshvan, or more properly pronounced, Merach Sivan. So I wouldn't try saying Merach Sivan under a chuppah, unless you have a degree in Semitic languages, but you should write Mar Cheshvan. Baruch Hashem, the Pesachei Tshuva quotes in the Get Pashit, that Cheshvan is kosher. It's not such a big chiddush based on what we saw from the Torah's Gittin. Everybody knows what you mean. But the proper name of the month is Mar Cheshvan. Okay, could be that according to the Ramban in his drushes that maybe when after Mashiach comes, so we'll write the English months in the Ksuva. Because Ramban writes, right, the whole Horat, how can you change the Torah? Chodesh HaLachem, Rishon. He says the mitzvah is to remember the Gula. So we remember the Gula from Sarayim by counting the months, from Nisan. We remember the Gula's Bavel by counting the months of the Babylonian months. And I remember the Geula from the last Gaulus by writing January, February, March, April. Okay, so stay tuned for a new Madrich that will have to come out then as to how to spell these. Are you going to write Yanuar or are you going to write January? Okay, so let's continue. Shem HaMokum. So that they don't have a chart for. Because you can get married anywhere on planet Earth. So how do you spell the Shem HaMokum? So Rabbi Bleich pointed out that at least the Chachila, one should write not just the name of the Mokom, but what it is. So I think he'll elaborate on later. If you're getting married in an inn that's in the middle of nowhere and it's not in a city, so Rabbi Bleich will discuss that you just write the name of the inn. But if you're getting married in a city or some town, so you write Masa. Masa is a convenient term that gets you out of many different nuances. Because an ear implies some kind of heavy population. A kfar implies not such a heavy population. A krach is a major metropolis. So if you write masa, it just means place. So that you get out of all the problems by writing masa. And then he discussed it. Did he discuss this already? A detailed machlok, so he put masa first or last. That's details. I think he preferred to write it first. Moshe Feinstein preferred to write masa last. But he suggested that you really should write it in. In the Sefer Nisuin Kelchasam, he quotes that some have the minig, and it seems to be a very common minig, to just omit masa. So in the Sefer Ksuvah Kelchasa, a battle between the two Hilchasas, so he says, where did he get his minig from? in Hilchos Gittin, we always write Masa. So why should you just omit the word Masa? It's not Ma'akev. But why should you omit it? So it's preferable to write the word Masa either before the name of the town or after. And that's where Rabbi Bleich noted that that's one of the reasons why it's important to know how to spell. And since at least the Chachila, we always write in one language, by Gittin it's Ma'akev. You can't write the name of the town or the name of the person in English. So in Ksuv, at least the Chachila, we do that. So you have to know how to transliterate English or other language towns into the Yiddish or Sephardic, whichever system you're using, code. That said, I just wanted to add a few more rules that Rabbi Bleich didn't mention in terms of transliteration rules. One of them is that an O sound is typically transliterated as an Aleph Vav. Why? Because an Aleph is a Kamatz and an U is a Shuruk. So if you put them all together, O, Aleph Vav. Aleph Vav is an O sound. An U sound is just a Vav. Kamatz is just an Aleph. And an O is Aleph Vav. Comes up a lot in names of towns.
U sound is what?
What? An U is a Vav. Sure. I'm sorry? That's an Oi.
One Vav is U and Vav Yud.
Okay. It's not exactly, as Rabbi Bleich pointed out, it's not the Allgemeine Generales Yiddish, it's Gittin's Yiddish. It's a different version. Other issues that come up, I think Rabbi Bleich mentioned that a W is two Vavs, and that a P and an F are both Pei, but the difference being that if you have an F at the end of a word, then you spell it with a Pei Sofit, because normally a Pei Sofit is a Fei. But if you have a P at the end of a word, like Philip or Philiptown, so then you would put a Pei regular, even though it's the end of a word, because a Pei regular is more likely to be a P rather than a P. Yeah, okay, Baruch Hashem. So I remember there's a big tumult with Rabbi Bleich. I don't want to dwell on this. One of the boys says, yes, he says, I'll toast in Mishlei. So Rabbi Bleich said, what? He said, yes, it says, I'll toast. So that does say it. But that's the exception, not the rule.
At the beginning of the word,
wait,
you said a pH is a
pay? A fuh.
Yeah.
A fuh is a, what we rewrite as a pay. A puh is also rewrite as a pay. But if it's at the end of a word, so then if it's a fuh, then you write a face of it the way you would always write, because same thing with English. Let's say you're writing a name Herman, so you don't write a nun at the end, the regular nun. You write a nun sofit. It's just that with the pay you have this coloring. So that's why if it's a puh, then you write a regular pay, even though it's at the end of the word. One other rule to keep in mind. Yeah.
Is there such a thing as the gesh and a face of it, like there is a
Yeah, you have it in one place. But it's rare, so and for the conventional purposes, when you write a fei sofit, everyone knows to read it as a fei. Lakewood. Don't get married there. How do you spell Lakewood? So based on Rabbi Bleich, it's a little tough. Because first of all, normally people spell Lakewood lamed yod yod. So Rabbi Bleich said that's not proper. I don't know, be ma'akev, because that's really Lakewood. Two yod is an I. I'm not going to go through all the rules. It was already discussed in Shir. But a Tzera or a Chirik is one Yud. So it's Lamed Yud, Kuf. And now, Wood. So go spell Wood. Well, two Vavs. And now, another Vav. So maybe that's Leku Vad. Right? So that's enough confusion to make the poskim say, we got to do something here. So that's why what they do in Lakewood is, that's foreign printed there. That's where they put on the Shar blot. They spell it Vav Vav, and then they stick in an Aleph for clarity. So they write Vav Vav Aleph Vav. Even though it can be read as Lake Vowed, based on our rules, but there's no other brera, otherwise it'll be read wrong the other way. So the what you have there, it's like the Aleph is becoming the holder of the Shuruk. Ooh, Lake, Ud. Aleph Vav, like Ud Mutzal Mayesh. You don't put in a kudus, the standard nusach. You could be worried about Zia for that, unless you're going to put in the kudus in everything. because I could be menake things in a different way other than the standard way, and you know, change the words that way. I guess that's the reason why you don't do it. Anyway, you don't. Another place this would come up is the other way. Let's say I had real examples of this, but let's say you have Woodside would be a similar thing to Lakewood, Woodside. But let's say you have a name of a town, I'm just making it up, Fujian. Right? Whatever, you could figure it out on your own. So any town that has something like a Fu, Lu, and then followed by something else? Lucent, okay. An AT&T company, but let's Lucent. So how do you spell, no, 1 second. No. What was the problem?
L-U-C-E-S-T, I think, no?
No. There was something wrong with the above there. Ooh. Okay, I forgot. No. There's no problem. You just write Lamed Vav, Samach Yud Nun Tes, or Fei Vav. I don't know. I had in my mind that sometimes when it's at the beginning, it causes a reverse problem.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
U and then a
vav. Okay.
And you have to have one vav and two vavs. And you have to
Dewey. Okay, so how do you spell Dewey? Okay, good. There you go. So the way you spell Dewey, so it would be Duvi, but you can't write Dalet vav 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 yud, so you write Dalet vav and then an aleph to divide, and then vav vav yud. Okay, so any town like that, so Louis. Well, Louisville will be similar, but okay. So that's another rule to keep in mind.
And
Sephardim have a different system. A lot of it is similar, but there's a difference between how to spell a J, and also they're much more likely to put in a cholam for an A sound, because in Sephardit, the cholam is similar to an A. So that's why they're much more likely to spell a town like. Or a name, let's say, Tony for everyone would be, well, yeah. The Ashkenazim would write Tony Aleph Vav. The Sephardim, I think for sure, would only put in a Vav there. But if you also had something that's an R, what's a name with an R in it? I don't want to take up too much time on this. So it's more than we have time for. That's a very good question. Please address that question to Rabbi Bleich. And I'm not sure. Okay, so that's the Shem HaMakom. It should be preceded by the word Masa. A little bit about names of states and names of countries. So Rabbi Bleich already noted that America Tzvonis should not be added in at all. We don't mention the continent, we don't mention the hemisphere, we don't mention the planet. So you know, so that crept up with some Masada Kedushin, who Rabbi Bleich said that Rabbi Binyanstein referred to as a Masada Gittin, as an Eino Baki, the Gittin V'Kedushin. However, the state is recommended to be mentioned by several Rabbanim, and that's in order to help clarify the fact that that town is in that state, because there are many similar sounding names. Exactly the same name, like their brook. There are about 40 Brooklyns. There's even an internet site that points this out, brooklyn.com. All the names of all the towns that are called Brooklyn. So Rabbi Bleich wasn't concerned about that, because he seemed to think that, way understood him, that the name of the town is primarily there to help us identify the Chassam and the Kala. And the only real problem, if you have two towns with the same name, is if they're going to be two people named this way in that other town too, which is very unlikely unless you know otherwise. That said, though, there are many who are makbid to put in the name of the state because of that chashash, and especially if it's known that there's another town with the same name, which is why we put in the names of rivers in Gittin to identify the town uniquely. Mm-hmm. But in Suva, it's generally not practiced to do that, so one way to do it is to identify the state. So how do you identify the state? So the normal way to do it is Brooklyn or Brooklyn Masa or Bimasa Brooklyn, Bimedinas, New York. Or Tinek Masa, Bitinek Bimasa Tinek, Bimedinas, New Jersey. And then consult a Masada Haget, how to spell Jersey, la la. because it could have been Muftak in a European way, Joisi. So before you write Jersey in Ksuva, just check with someone who knows how to spell it. Because Rabbi Black pointed out that once the spelling sticks, even if it's a slight error or is not in accordance with our current pronunciation, if it's already Muftak, so we try to keep that convention. So many do write that. Rabbi Black was very against the insertion of commas in a Ksuva, and certainly without the comma. Brooklyn, New York. No such town as Brooklyn, New York. Because the convention in Ksuva is that the text itself should say everything. You shouldn't need pausing in order for Brooklyn, New York to make sense. It has to be Brooklyn, stop, New York. But it doesn't say Kansar Chahafik. So that's why Blair said, if you're going to put in the state, stick in a word, the Medina. But don't put in a comma or put in nothing. So that's what he said. He always cringes when he hears this, etc. That said, and you know, ani tantan shebektantan, to be machnes roshi ben horam hakidolim, but I just bringing forth that what it says in this forum, they quote that there were many rabbanim who weren't afraid to put in commas, nor to just omit the comma and just put it straight, to write things like Brooklyn, New York, Zichron Meir, Bnei Brak, with a comma, without a comma. So I don't know, it seems to be this machlokas haposkim here as to how loyal you have to be to the old conventions of Ksuva, and to what extent can we introduce the fact, well, we live here in the 21st century, we know what Brooklyn, New York is. So, but you seem to have those two sheets on both sides. So the safest way is write through Medinas. That will make everyone happy. But certainly, if you didn't write through Medinas, it's not going to apostle. No one's going to apostle Ksuva based on that. If you put in the comma, you didn't put in the comma. If you wrote Brooklyn, New York, it's also not going to apostle either. Okay, yes.
Also, an additional problem, when you mentioned when it came to writing vowels, if you were going to add symbols in general,
okay,
in a kudos, then you could make that a forgery.
Yeah, right. Right, that's what I mentioned earlier. Right. Right. Very good. Okay, so that's the shame, hamakom. It should be put in, and stay tuned. Rabbi Leif will get involved in several very fascinating ideas, getting married in a country club where there is no town, or near a town, in a suburb where everyone calls it New York, but it really has another title. All of these do come up, especially in wedding context, where you have wedding halls a lot of times in suburbs or middle of nowhere on a golf course, on an island somewhere, on a tropical island. So all these have been discussed. Baruch Hashem, this is Gittin. So the Aruch HaShulchan extensively discussed these shayles. So that'll come up. But the basics are very straightforward. And just make sure, if you don't know how to spell it, that you consult with someone who does before you write out a ksuva. You should know how to spell it. Yes?
If you just say Brooklyn without the Medina, there's not okay.
No, Rabbi Black actually preferred that. He preferred that, and he held that it's not ma'akeh for sure, not because of its cheshbon, that it's only when you have a Shnei Yosef and Shimon. And it's not ma'akeh for another reason. Because if you write Brooklyn and there are 100 Brooklyns, so it's as if you didn't write it. So let it be as if you didn't write it. What's the halacha if you didn't write the name of the town? It's still kosher. That's the Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Shtaros, in Simin Mem Beis, I think. That actually no, Simin Mem Gimel, Sivchav Beis, Shtar She'en Kosev Bo Mokum, Shenichta Bo Kosher. So it's not Ma'akev, right? Like what's concerned that once you're going to introduce other names, the people are going to make a mistake. So that's why you'll strive for the minimum. But there are many who do write it, and they write it correctly, but Medinas.
Just one other question on the issue of a shame. If a shame got corrupted, like if somebody came on Ellis Island and the name got corrupted in the English spelling from the original spelling, and then you go back a few years later, let's say less than a generation later,
I'll discuss it in a little more in a different context. Just, I consulted with Rav Shechter Shlip on some of the shayles that came up, so he was of the opinion that either way is fine. Brooklyn and Zenas, New York, Brooklyn, New York, Brooklyn Common, New York, he thought all of it is fine. So just indicating that was his opinion. Okay, let's continue. Although in the Kitzur Nachla Shiva, they don't have a base before the name of the town, but I think the more standard Nusach, the way they have it in Gittin, is with a base. This took place in this town, not just this town. In other words, the way he has it in the Kitzur Nachla Shiva is Ir Ungvar. So I think the more common convention would be Bi'ir Ungvar, or Bi'masa Ungvar, Bi'tinek, Bi'tinek Masa, Bi'masa Tinek, not just Tinek. But again, since the Kitzur Nachla Shiva was very influential, a lot of times you hear that bay's omitted. Here in the RCA version, they leave it up to your imagination. They don't put in a preceding bay. So, but presumably it's more proper to put the bay in. Okay, Levriyat Olam, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that before. That's stuck in after number five. That's the second typo. Because we count to the years of the world. Why do we have to say that? Isn't it obvious? Well, it's not so obvious that they used to count the Shtaris, they used to count to the Greek kings, the Malachim, etc., etc. Which leads to our next comment. We write a strange nusach, you know, in Shtaris and in Gittin. Leminyan she'anu monin kan, the Brooklyn, Masa, etc. And only here, and in Teaneck they have a different count, and in Yerushalayim they have a different count. So that's what they point out, that this covers all the bases. Because first of all, maybe in some town we're not aware of, they have a different system of counting years. So this is all the count here. So everyone knows, if they get a hold of Brooklyners, and they'll see what they mean by this date, so it leaves off any ambiguity. Furthermore, for those who are very into the Luach, so when the Ravonson created the world, so created it, let's take it simply, it's a further complication. In Tishrei, that was Adam Rishon's creation, but the earlier days were in Elul. So that was kind of like a Nol year of sorts. So they call it the Molad Baharad, and then there's a Molad Vid, for those who know the Molad stuff. So what's year one? Elul is year one? Or is Adam Rishon year one? So that was a machlokis, and there were different minhagim in Klal Yisrael which year to count. So in order to chas v'shalom not get involved in a shayla of a muktim, so we write, listen here, I don't know how to count, but I know one thing, that in Brooklyn, New York, or Brooklyn, Venus, New York, this is the way we count. It's 5764, so there's no shayla. So we stick in the date that's connected to the city to avoid that issue as well. Yeah.
If the name of the city is connected to shayla v'shalom muktim, then should need the
Medina
as well.
Yeah, so if you ask Rav Leich, he'd probably say, but we're pretty certain that in all 50 Brooklyns, half of which probably don't have Jews in them, and the half that do, they're counting for this count too. Your points are well taken, that would be another reason to be machped. I don't know, again, I'm from the Tanim, but my own personal, I wasn't sure why it's so terrible to write in Medina's New York. You know, New York is very muxlik, you can't make a mistake on it. And if you will, you make a mistake in the city. It's more likely to make a mistake in the city. So it can't hurt to write in Medina's New York. You're throwing in another reason why it may be more convenient.
There is one problem, though. And the problem is that old times, although they're dying out, used to call Manhattan New York. And now today, all five boroughs are referred to. But even though you still use the old name.
But the state was always New York. So Rabbi Bleich said, but that might change. But names of cities could also change.
Right.
So you can't worry about that into the future. So okay, this is start a Makan Lakan. Presumably, if you're writing New York, you might even write in Manhattan, New York, but Medina's New York, right? Because in Ksuvos and Gittin, if you're getting married in Manhattan, you don't write Manhattan. You write New York because that's the way it became Huchzak.
Right.
So again, so if you're gonna put it all together, then you're probably right. New York, Medina's New York. Unless, I'm not sure, I have to ask Rabbanim who write in Medina, so maybe they don't bother writing it because it's clear enough that it's in New York, although there is a New York in New Jersey too, isn't there? The West New York, okay. Alright, I'm not sure. I never heard of Ksuva, although I haven't been to too many weddings in Manhattan, on New York, Medina's New York. Let's continue. Eighth. So this is something that Rav Shechter taught us many times, that we, as opposed to a get, even though some Rishonim had it in a get too, but the Rosh already questions it, why it's in a get. Eich, how? What how? So starting in the middle of a sentence here. So this is basically the language of the Eidim. Because the get is the language of the Baal. Right? So the Baal says, I, Pliny, Alnoini, Ben, Shemaini, etc., I'm divorcing you, my wife, was my wife, and now is no longer my wife, etc., etc. It's the language of the Baal. And then the Eidim on the bottom testify that this is what the Baal is saying to his wife, as opposed to other stories where it's the Eidim talking. So that's why we stick in an Eich. In other words, it's as if we're saying, we the Eidim signed below are testifying how the Chassan said to his Kala, etc., be my wife, etc., and I promise to do this and this and pay you this amount of money if we get divorced, etc. So that's the Eich. Some Yishonim had it even in Gittin. That's why the Rosh questions it. Why you really shouldn't be in Gittin. But so Lamaisa, it's Nahug not to put it in, but there were several Rishonim who did have it in. But in a Ksuva, we do have it. We have Eich. Because of this, Rav Shechter, I didn't have a chance to really talk it over with him, but in our Dalit Kosli Yeshiva, it's a fairly well known that there's a Rav Shechter's Nusach of the Ksuva. It's not Rav Shechter's Nusach of the Ksuva. It's the regular Ksuva with a little tweak here and there. It's nothing so different from a regular Ksuva. Basically what Rav Shechter did, together with Professor, who was it? Steiner from Revel, just tried to get the most accurate text of the Aramaic, so it should be perfect. The most major change in that nusach that's going floating with emails, etc., because it's becoming very popular, use that and then stick in the name so you could make a nice, pretty tool, whichever font you want. You don't have to bother going to the farm store. So in here, it doesn't say just Eich, it says Anan Sahadi Eich. So that makes the language of the Edim more explicit. So again, I refer you to the Ksuba Kilchasa for an entire five or so page essay as to why he thinks that should not be done. But no ikuvim here. Either way is fine, and everyone agrees it's the language of the Edim. The only thing is that there are elements of the Ksuba where we make it sound more like the language of a Bezdin, because it has elements of a Maisa Bezdin, because the Ksuba is a Tnai Bezdin. So that's why there are those who ran away from that nusach, but Rav Shechter preferred it for clarity, apparently, because it is ultimately is the language of the age. So that's the most major change. But either way, it's fine. Okay, I put the word. Yeah.
I noticed on the RCA library that doesn't say Riyasaola, at least in the original. So
that's right. No, that's not Tolium and Hugim. You're supposed to stick that in. That's a typo number two. So why what? Why did they put it in?
Oh, yeah.
They made a mistake. That's why I put it in.
Sorry,
so
there aren't different people.
No. Only 1 minute, they write Labria Solom, and they just made a mistake. It's not Malkish, because even if you don't write Labria Solom, everybody counts that way. So it's known that it's Labria Solom. That's the favorite in Ilchus Gittin, that if you omit it, it's not a problem, even in a get, certainly in a ksuba. But it should be stuck in.
So who says that
it's
not
I think it's the favorite in the Mechaber, I think. I think it's repeated twice, once in Ilchus Gittin and once in Ilchus Doris. There's okay. Gittin is Kuf Chaf Vav, I think, so it's Vav Zayin, and then Mishtaris is somewhere in the men's. I'm not sure. I don't want to take up time now.
Okay.
Right. It isn't a Bezdin signing it, but a Ksuva has elements of a Maisa Bezdin because the Chiyuvim are considered as a. The tokef of the chiyuvim of the tschayvios in the ksuva have the tokef as if they were a shtar that were written in a basement. So I think that might have something to do with the issue. I didn't read the essay in the ksuva kolchasa, but it could be that he just wants to be loyal to the original text. He says most of the original text in the Rishonim didn't have an outside. Okay, I put the word hechasan in parentheses. And the reason I did that is for the following. The name of the chassan is mentioned about four times in the ksuva. Once at the beginning, twice in the middle, once at the end. The name of the kala, I believe, is mentioned three times. Once at the beginning, once in the middle, once at the end. So the convention is as follows. Many of these conventions were established by one of the Gedolei Ashkenaz, the Maharam Minsk, who wrote extensively about the Gedukim of the ksuva. So they all quote from him. He wrote out a text. Those who want to be Mayan more, so you could look in the Otsar Poskim at the end of Siman Samach Vav, they have his text in Maram Mintz with footnotes, etc. So he writes that the practice is, as a shorthand, we would only write the full name, Ploni, son of Amoni, and the same thing with the Kala, the first and the last times. But in the middle times, we just write the name of the person himself. The full name, meaning Avram Chaim, not just Avram, but not the name of the father. So that's one of the conventions in the ksuba. So if you will, you hear they don't have it by number. So the Shem HaChatzin number one, you would put in the full name, but Shem HaChatzin number two and number three, you put in, and actually number four, I made a mistake, has to be five times the name of HaChatzin. You only write the first name, not the name of the father. And the same thing for the Kala. Now, how do we identify him? So, throughout the text of the Ksuva, we say Chasandinan. In other words, our Chasan. But the first mentioning of the chatan, he didn't do anything yet. Because he didn't say, the text of the Ksuva says, as the chatan said, be my wife. Right? Well, before he said that, heavily lay into. He's not a chatan yet. So the more common practice, this is the third typo here in the RCA Madrich. I'm not out to bash the RCA Madrich. This is a very good text that has nekudos, etc., and all the numbers, but there's some typos. Rather than getting another text, it should be harder to navigate, so I stuck to this one, but there are a few typos. So the more common convention is if the person was already married before, so he's not a bocher anymore, so that you write Reb, whatever, Reish with an apostrophe. But if he was never married before, the first time you write HaBocher. But to write HaChasan is normally not the practice, because he's not a chasan yet until he has described Hevi Lila Inti. All the other times we say Chasandanan, Chasandanan, Chasandanan. But the first time, you either write HaBocher, or nothing, or Reb. But to write HaChasan is not the common practice. Certainly not a psul, Baruch Hashem. None of the typos in the RCA Suva are psulim. But it's the more common practice not to write HaChasan, to write HaBocher if he's single, and or Reish with an apostrophe if he's not. Shem HaChasan, so Rabbi Bleich pointed out, you have to medakdek very much in the name of the Chasan of the Kala, because if you write it the wrong way, you could pass Laksuva. This is a very easy way to pass Laksuva. Not everything's a psul. If you write Leib with one yud as opposed to two yuds, or vice versa, it's not necessarily a psul, but L'chachili, you certainly write it the right way. But if you write, Farada with a vase or a vase instead of a vase, so that's a different name. So it's going to pass Laksuva. So it's important to either know the conventions or consult with someone who does in order to write up the Ksuva correctly. Yes?
Maybe it's a simple question, but the Chasan actually, when the end is signed, it hasn't actually said the way they lead to.
Yeah, so that's what Black's going to discuss in the future, that the whole Ksuva is written al Shem HaAsid. But within the imaginary world of the Ksuva, before it's actually given over, as of this point, he hasn't done anything yet. That's why you have that Nakuda. Okay, the father's name, or Blake will discuss at length all the ins and outs of the father's name, because that's not so pashut. If there's a father, fine. What if there's an adoptive father? What if there's no halachic father? His father's a non-Jew. What if he was adopted and doesn't know the name of his father? All that will be discussed. Bez Hashem, the simple case is write the name of the father. Lemishpachas. So here the RCA Ksuva does what Rabbi Black recommended against, and puts in the family name. I was a little confused. I think Rabbi Black and the Chabura said that Rabbi Moshe held you should not put in the family name. I thought Rabbi Moshe said he should put in the family name. I thought he was from those who said you should. Other posts can say you shouldn't. But Rabbi Moshe, I think, says you should. Amongst those who say that you should are, I think, according to what I read and I thought, and the Igris, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Soloveitchik felt that way, apparently, is what I heard from his students. Rav Shechter Shlita also feels he should put in the family name. And Rabbi Zwillig and Neuberger, because of Rabbi Bleich Se'ara, that maybe you'll spell it wrong, so they are more hesitant to put in the family name. I think Rabbi Willig will put it in if it's absolutely Borur. And then there's no stira between the way you would spell it in Gittin as the way they spell it theoretically, according to the conventions of Gittin, the way they spell it. So, let's say Willig, the way Rabbi Willig spelled his name Willig, everyone agrees that's the way to spell Willig. It's Vav Vav Yud Lamed Yud Guv Gimel. And if you would marry, let's say, family Cohen, okay, Cohen, Kaf Hei Nun. But he married into a family, not him, his children married into a family Weinberg. So how do you spell Weinberg? So by the conventions, it would be Vav Vav Yud Yud Nun Beis Ayin Resh Gimel. But the Sri Deish spelled his name Vav Yud Nun, and that's the way the Kala side spelled it too. So he said, okay, Lama Li Atzar Sos, he didn't put it in. So that's why some have a pshara. Some are going to put it in when it's smooth, but when they're going to get involved in a stira between the way they spell it and the way conventions spell it, so they hesitate not to put it in. So that leads to my next comment, then I'll take the question in a second. There seems to be a massive dispute between the purists and the non-purists as to the conventions, as to how medakta you have to be on that. Rabbi Bleich is what I put under the column of the purists, which normally in Hilchos Gittin, everyone's a purist. You have a name, a woman comes in to have a get, and her name is Golda. Right? So, I think most of the Sadri Gittin are not even going to bother asking her, how do you spell your name, and do you spell your name frequently, not frequently. Listen, it's always safer just to follow the convention. This is the way you pronounce it. So, Gimel, Aleph, Lamed, Dalet, Aleph. Because with a foreign name, supposed to Hebrew name, you put an Aleph at the end as opposed to a Hey. Ah, but they use that Hebraic spelling and they put a Hey in. Listen, I want to make sure that you're divorced by the time this document is given. I think the common practice is that they just follow the pure conventions. However, in the standard poskim within Hilchos Gittin, there is somewhat of a concern about following the way the fellow himself signs his name. His name, or to some extent her name. So on the one hand, concerning women especially 150 years ago, 200 years ago, women didn't sign that often. So that was more of a tendency in the poskim to certainly ignore the spellings the way a woman would spell her name. But nowadays women sign their names more often, and we're dealing with a ksuva, not a get, so maybe you should be a little more follow their spelling. So Rabbi Bleich is a purist, and he says just follow the conventions and that's it. But Rav Shechter Shlita, and here the Sefer Ksuva Kilchsa, quotes from Rav Palachek, also that Rabbi quoted earlier, that at least regarding the hey versus the aleph, you should follow their spelling. That's a very common issue that comes up with Yiddish names. Risa, Brina, Golda, Bela, these are all Yiddish names, so by the regular conventions they have aleph in them. But I think most people nowadays spell them with hey's. So many Rabbanim recommend to spell it with a hey. Rabbi Bleich would not tell you that, following the more rigorous conventions of Gittin. But many recommend the hey. Baruch Hashem, either one's not ma'akev, but just if you are filling out a ksuva, you should be aware of that machlokis to get a final psak which one to follow. But Rabbi Bleich is going with the aleph, and others go with the hey, meaning following their signature. And that is especially relevant to the spelling of family names. Rav Shechter, for example, extends that rule that the basic rule of thumb is that you follow their spelling unless it's wrong. What's called wrong? That means that if anyone would read that, you would definitely read it wrong because it's just not read that way. Let's say you would spell Mufzik by whom? By them, so that could be a toss. But by all Mitzadri Gittin, so then you will say Hufzik. Let's say you have a name like what's a common last name? I don't know, Gold. Right? So let's say someone spells the name Gold Gimel Vav Lamed Aleph Dalet. Is it wrong? You can't read it as Gold. It's Gulad, Gulod, Golad. Is it wrong? There are a lot of quirks that come up in spellings of names. So if it's just dead wrong, so everyone agrees that either ignore it totally or spell it right. But let's say Haber. Haber, so I adopted the Hebrew spelling and my father adopted Hey Beit Reish. That's not the way you spell Haber in according to convention. According to convention, it's Hey. Beit Ayin Reish, maybe. Depends whether it's Haber or Haber. Right? They don't pronounce it that way. So what's after the Hey? Yud, right? Hey, right? So when I got married, so I asked Rosh Hashanah, it was the Masada, so what should I do? I think I was aware from fourth year that there was this debate. So he told me that as long as it's not wrong, can't say a name is wrong, if you put it Seir under the hay, it looks fine. In the case that I said, you know, the Gulad, you can't put any Nakuda under the Lamed and get it right. So, Ayin. I'm just pointing out it's a little complicated. Rav Shechter's rule of thumb that if the family name is spelled wrong, then either don't put it in or spell it right. But if it's spelled right, even though it's not the convention, so you can put it in. Rabbi Bleich, again, he recommends not to put it in. But if you are putting it in, rigorously follow the regular convention.
Okay. For example, Nid Khan in Dutch Jews, Nid Khan, C-A-A-N.
But they don't say Ka'an. You follow the pronunciation, not the writing. And certainly not the English writing.
Right.
Whether you follow the Hebrew writing is more complicated, but it would depend on whether it's wrong or not. The most extended version of this that I heard secondhand in the name of Shechter, there was a fellow in the yeshiva by the name of Shachet. So he spelled his name Shechet. So Rav Shechter thought that was also good, because that's where the name comes from. Shachet, it's a twist of Shechet. So that's even more of an extension. So there are different days, and it's just in some, Rav Shechter holds that you could put in the name, the family name, as the person spells it, unless you're convinced that it's just the wrong spelling. Rabbi Bleich says you shouldn't put it in at all, unless you're going to put it in perfectly according to the conventions. And Rabbi Willig and Neuberger seem to have, or at least Rabbi Willig, is a Pshara Shita, that you put it in if there are no problems, otherwise just skip it, because there's not really such a need to put it in. If you're not putting it in, just make sure you don't use the Nusach of the RCA, because then you're going to have extra text. You're going to start crossing out, it's not so pretty. A lot of halachas about that, about crossing out in Sukkot. You'll forgive me, but it's a little over, and there's a little more material I have to stick in, so I'll take the questions after. Okay. In number 7, we identify the number 6, we identify the type of kala that we have in front of us. Either she's a bistula, or she's an almana, or a grusha. So you have that in chart 6. Psulta for a bistula, armalta for an almana, misarachta for a grusha, and giyarta for a giyaris. There are many poskim who allow you to fudge when you read the ksuba. But to not make it volate as to the status of the kala. But not to write the wrong thing. You shouldn't write the sulta if the kala is a grusha, because you're going to have her marry a kohen, perhaps, if this marriage dissolves through the death of the husband, because then she's an almana. So it's best to record, or certainly not to record a lie, right? That if the kala is a grusha, so. The more common practice is to write Mesarachta, but you certainly cannot write Besulta if the Kala is a Grusha. But in terms of reading it under the Chuppah, so many Rabbanim are more lenient in there to pronounce Besulta. Because Rabbi Shechter told me, everybody knows that they play games when they read, and the Rabbanim at least, who are the ones who are going to be involved in our subsequent marriage. So you're not going to get a hold of the video and say, they read Besulta under the Chuppah, even though it says Misarachta, so maybe she's really a Besulta. They know you follow the text of the Ksuva, which is why the text of the Ksuva should be correct. You shouldn't play games with that. But, if she is a Misarachta, which is a Grusha, you should write it. Rabbi Bleich, we'll discuss that. But Hashem, Ramosha has a tshuva on that, so we'll discuss it. If she's not a halakhically problematic Be'ula, such that she's a Be'ula as a result of a Yisrael Kosher, so then there might not even be an objection to put in the Sultan. But if she's a halakhically problematic Be'ula, such as she had relations with a non-Jew, then it might be more crucial to write in Be'ulta. It should be more crucial to write it in. Okay, that's 6. 7. 7, we identify again who she is, but in the context of the mohar, right? The mohar is the ksuva. So the standard text is to identify what kind of mohar it is. So it's either mohar besulaihi, mohar amalusaihi, mohar mirsarchusaihi, or mohar giyarsuchsaihi. And if she's a chalutza, so then it's off the charts. But there's also a nusach for that too. Mohar chalutzaihi. Okay. There are nuschos that omit the word mohar at all. And the word, this whole mess, when we're dealing with a non-besula, so they just write kesef. There are nusachos like that. But this nusach they're following is they write the word mohar, but they just stick in the identifying word. 8. She goes through this after the shir, just because it's a little hard to juggle what's what. In the package, you have a Hebrew translation of the ksuva, so it might help to consult that. What does she get? So it's well known that a Besula gets 200 and everybody else gets 100. So in 8 we either write Mosan, which is the Aramaic for 200, or Mea. I don't know why we use Aramaic for 200 and Hebrew for 100, but that's the convention. 9, for a Besula we write Echazi Lichi Midoraisa, which is appropriate for you Min HaTorah, and for everyone else we write Midrabanan. I think it's fairly well known that the Machlokes Rishonim that either we write Midoraisa for a Besula because a Ksuva Besula is Doraisa, according to those who hold that way, whereas the Ksuva everyone else is Darabanan, or we write Midoraisa according to the Rosh, I believe, that even though the Ksuva is Darabanan, But we give a ksuva money, which is the money of the deraisa, meaning the higher level coin, the kesef on a deraisa level. That's why Rav Adi Yosef for Svardin, so they omit midoraisa because they hold that a ksuva is the rabbanan, and they don't necessarily want to follow that rush that the money is most deraisa, so they just omit it totally. I don't think they write the rabbanan; they just write the chazidish. Then we repeat the Shema Kala. In six, we always a lot of does over here, just like we say chasandanan. So for the kala, we identify her by her previous marital status. So in six, and six again on the bottom, we'll say besulta da, or malta da, or misarach da, etc. Ten is a little interesting. There are three parts to the ksuva. There's the ikar ksuva, which is the 200 or 100. There's the tosefes ksuva, which Minig Ashkenaz has to assess at 100 zukukim kesef. Right, Black will discuss what the value of that is. That's Minig Israel. Amongst Ashkenazim, we always have a set amount. The Sfaradim have a different Minig on that. And then we have the Nadunya. What's the Nadunya? That's the assets that the wife is bringing into the marriage that she expects back, that the husband's Makabal Achrayus on, and they get back as is if it's available, and money if it's not available. That's called the Niftei Tzon Barzal, or the Nadunya, if the marriage breaks up. So that's also assessed Meminig Yisrael as 100 Zekukim, even if the Kala has nothing. So we still, the Chassan has the right to Makabel a fiction on his own. Maybe the Kala brought in a dollar, but I will treat it as if she brought in 100 Zekukim Kesef. So that's why we write the Dain Nadunya Dehan Ola Slei Mibay something Bein Mikesef Bein Zav. This is the Nadunya that she brought in, all the gold and the silver and the clothing, etc., and all the furniture. Hakol kibla lov, let's say Yaakov Chaim Chasan Danan, and then we write how much we value it at. So how much do we value it at? So we just said Meya, but that's only for a besula. For an almana grush, etc., we have it. There's no halacha like that in the Gemara, but that's the meaning. That just like the Torah have, just like the ikar ksuvas have, so we have the tosefes ksuva as well as the nedunya. Instead of meyas b'kupim, we have chamishim. That's what you have there on the text. Instead of a meyas b'chamishim. Okay, that's clear. Now number 10. So number 10 is relevant as follows: who's paying for the nedunya? So in a classic circumstance, the kala is not necessarily employed, so she's not bringing her own money. She's bringing money from her father's household. So that's why I write in typical case, mibei avuha. She's bringing in the nedunya from her father. What if she doesn't have a father? So then we write, mibei nisha. That's what they have there spelled out on number 10. Right? That's liyasoma, laumana, lagrusha. We write nisha. Nisha is interpreted to mean someone whose father has been forgotten. Nashani elokim mikol amali. Right? The name Menashe. So when she has a father, you write avuha. When you don't have a father, you write, or the father's not relevant, you write nisha. What if you made a mistake and you wrote the wrong thing? So the Rishonim proof from Gemara is that it really doesn't matter. Because sometimes you say mibei avuha even after the father's dead. And sometimes you use the term bei nisha even when the father's alive. It's not ma'akev, but the common convention is when the father's alive, you write avuha. When the father's not, you write bei nosha or bei nisha. Why is that relevant? Who cares who's supplying the nedunya? So apparently there's some minig that if the kala dies very quickly after the marriage, so rather than the husband inheriting the nedunya, which would be the normal halacha, it goes back to the point of origin. A takana, because the father, I gave so much money to my daughter and she didn't even get a year out of marriage. So there was a takana from the takana shum, to give it back to the father. That's why you identify the minig, to identify the sorcery. That's why the Asamu say that if the Kala is married off based on stucca funds, that you write, Dan Ola Slay Mikupat Stucca. So in case the marriage dissolves, within a year or two, if she dies rather, then it should go back to the Kupat Stucca. Okay. That's, I think, not commonly practiced. The Ramah writes, in the first year you give back all, and the second you give back two. The half. Right, that's what I just saw today. Black will discuss it. Okay, finally, 14. Kanina. We make a kinyan on all of the chiyuvim of the ksuva before the Eidim sign. So Black will discuss that. Make sure you do it before the Eidim sign, not after. And make sure to fill in the kanina. So Rav Bleich will discuss Beis Hashem that you really don't have to fill in Vekanina. Put it in first. In other words, it has to be filled in. But don't leave it blank and fill it in. Put it in originally. There are those who are makbid to fill it in later because of Mechzik Yishikra. So Rav Bleich will show, what do you mean Mechzik Yishikra? The whole tzuvah is Mechzik Yishikra if you say that. Because nothing happened yet. Right? So that's what he recommended. I don't know, Rav Bleich actually said, why not let people have their chumrah? Okay. But many other poskim recommend, don't worry about this chumrah, just put it in. Because what happens is that 10% of the chasnas, they're going to forget to put it in, and then it gets involved in a serious question of a tzuvah with a blank in it. And they're reading the tzuvah at the chuppah, and say, you know, read the text, the law tells the story, yikes! What do we do now? Can we take out a pen? Can we cross it out? Can we fill it in? It's already after the eight inside. It's not so simple whether you could fill it in there. Okay. Better to put it in advance. Many people have computerized tuvas, as I mentioned in the past. They just fill in everything so that everything's neat. So I just wanted to mention the following. If you're sticking in Vekanina, even better. Everything should be justified. No blank spaces. Everything should be filled in, and the same thing if you even more so if you're filling in a pre-printed one. If there's any blank spaces, you should put lines to like you do on a check to make sure there's no problem of ziyuf. Many people forget that in real life, and also certainly on the test. So I take off of that to make sure to stick in the any blank space should be filled in with what they call tiyuta lines. Okay, it's probably not such a... Well, listen, we have Baruch Hashem and Arbeis Medrash, we have a weeder blank, right? So maybe you'll have a ziv. One person's weeder and one person's weeder blank. Okay, not so likely because, you know, the name of the Kala, etc. So probably not such a problem. The Ksuva Kilchasa writes, you don't really have to worry about Tiyot on the date. What are you going to do? Eight and more. So it'll be a Shtar Ma'ocher. That's not a problem. So okay, but, you know, instead of remembering all these rules, when you just fill in all the blanks. But you're correct that some certain times it wouldn't be so crucial. But certainly in the amounts, it's going to be...
What?
Tiyuta, the line.
Oh, okay.
Line.
So where's
okay? Yeah, Tiyuta, test Yud Vav, test Aleph. Okay, another rule to keep in mind, if you're not using a standard printed text, or sometimes even if you are, and they make a mistake in it, especially the very artistic ones. Hakol Shor V'Kayim should finish the end of a line. And if it doesn't finish at the end of the line, take out your pen, draw in lines to fill it into the end. And the reason for that is the same idea, because we're worried that people will write extra text. And he also added another $1 million. Hakol Shor V'Kayim. Because it says in Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to write Hakol Shor V'Kayim, which basically means everything's kosher. You can write it twice, provided that it ends at the end. So if you're going to write Hakol Shor V'Kayim in the middle, so we'll add in, and the chasen of Mechai himself and another $2 million, Hakol Shor V'Kayim. So if you have such a ksuva, you should fill it in. If you're having a computerized ksuva, so make it big font or whatever, so it should fill into the end of the line, or add in asterisks or dashes, etc. We're already over, so I'm sorry for taking everybody over, but there were a few extra halachas that are nogea for ksuva that I wanted to mention. And especially, I mean, I'm. When it comes to shtaris, I think we can correctly state that, except for those in the Yadin Kolel, not me, who have gone through Hilchos Shtaris, we don't really know too much about this. It's not something that's, you know, it's not exactly the Mishnah Berurah. And since there are quite a few things that can go wrong, so I just wanted to go through a little bit some of the very common halachos of shtaris as they relate to ksuvas. And rather than just saying it in the air, I just wanted to go through the text of the Kitzanach HaShiva. So those who want to stay for this portion of the Shir, be my guest. Those who do not, are certainly not on any kind of Bechina. So I'm done, but I'm not done. So let's begin. Simon Bey.